and welcome to another episode of A Cast of Entrepreneurs. I'm Elaine Stroud, Chief Executive of the Entrepreneurs Forum, and with me today I have Sally Cowling. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Elaine.
We are in for a treat this afternoon. Today I've invited three entrepreneurs and we're going to be talking about resilience, because we know it's not easy being an entrepreneur. Sometimes the roller coaster ride that you'll go on has bigger highs and possibly bigger lows than you ever expected. So we'll be unpicking some of that and learning some strategies to help you build your own resilience in your own business. So I am delighted to introduce today's guests. With me I have Sarah Pittendrig, who is a serial entrepreneur and a longtime friend of the Entrepreneurs Forum. I have alongside her Matt Mavir, who is the founder of Last Night of Freedom, and they are celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. And I think that's commendable, and you should be congratulated for that. And I'm very excited about the party, which is coming up. More on that later. And finally with us, we have Kim Catton, who is the founder of SB1 Group. Welcome to you all.
Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for having us.
I'm excited about this conversation. We've been having a bit of a preamble about where it might go, so we'll see. But we'll kick off with the questions, and we'd like to start off with just learning a little bit about you. And I'll start with Kim. Would you like to tell us a little bit about how you've got to where you are today with SB1 Beauty?
So I have nine lives, I think people like to say. I've been quite a few things in my life. So to round it up, started as a makeup artist and ended up, I've always kind of had an entrepreneurial spirit, started off as a makeup artist, ended up working in TV and film, and found a niche for a product that wasn't available. So it was an eyebrow styling product that I needed, created it ourselves, and Soap Brows was born. So most people know us for kind of West Barn or Soap Brows. That really quickly propelled us into the beauty industry, which is a tough industry to be in. So we started there, and again, like you said, highs and lows. We've had a journey and a half, and what we do now is SB1 Group kind of manages West Barn, but also we create brands from concept all the way through to customer for new companies. So it's either brand new concepts, brand new ideas, which is really fun for me, or it's maybe someone's halfway through a project and they maybe not being able to get it off the ground or whatever it might be there. But mostly in the cosmetics and skincare world. We have a clinic as well, but that's just my Thursdays.
And you've got a manufacturing facility down in
Durham, yeah, we do everything from start to finish within that facility. So literally from the concept of the idea, new product development meetings, to pick and pack and finished orders that we've made, manufactured, boxed, labelled, batch coded and shipped, everything from that one facility. Yeah, it's fun. It's good fun.
It's fun. I've been down to your office and I've made some products myself there, and that was a lot of fun.
We have a great range of stuff. So my gran actually works doing the boxing and label, and she's 80. So it's a lovely vibe in there. It's really nice.
And Kim, you said at the start of that fabulous introduction that you'd always had an entrepreneurial spirit.
Yes.
Where do you think that came from?
Were
you brought up in an entrepreneurial environment?
Absolutely. She had a care home, and I kind of grew up when I was a very small child. I wanted some new school shoes. My mum said, no, come and do some kitchen work if you want school shoes. So I was in there from about the age of 11 or 12, earning for me graft and making sandwiches and doing dinners and all sorts of other bits and bobs. So I kind of saw that firsthand from a very young age. And yeah, I think the whole family is like that. So my brother,
it's kind of
my sister,
in your blood.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My mum, all of us, we're all the same. All mad.
Is that the same for you, Matt? Were you brought up in an entrepreneurial environment?
No, actually, my maternal grandfather, he's an Australian. And he was a serial, in inverted commas, entrepreneur. But the reality was he just bounced from job to job setting up businesses. And he ended up being bankrupt three times. And as a result, my mum had to move house a lot. And they were always on the sort of run, if you like, from bailiffs. Mm-hmm. And I think, if anything, that was something, like when I first started this, it was straight out of uni. Actually, it's still in uni at the time. And that was something she was really keen on me not following down pops.
You see, Matt, it's a proper job when you finished your
degree.
Yeah,
and I think that was a big part of the start. Is like I started this really early. We just turned 22, and it was a university assignment which had started as, could you set up a website? And the idea turns out to be, yes, we can. And it's gone on from there. But I think around about the age of 26, there was a real crossroads for me as to, well, what do I do? Do I keep doing this website, which is all about stags and hens and fun and things, or do I actually like go and get a proper job, if you like? And my mum was definitely, you should probably go and get a proper job. But actually, we went the other way. But I think that was the point at which I really got serious about everything. Got to 27, thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to do this like really properly. And so we're, like you mentioned before, we're coming up to 25 years now. And so we've definitely got serious about it. And we've grown it along the way. And we've done the travel side of Stag and Hare. And we moved into the accessories. Along the way, we built up an apart hotel in Newcastle to take our groups. But we're also, we've used all of our knowledge from the accessories and t-shirt printing. And now the big thing that we're pushing on to, the next big project, is a company called Equipped. And it's all about corporate teamwear. So we're trying to take everything that we've learned and grow up again and then and expand into that market.
And I guess starting so young, you almost had nothing to lose, did you, if you were starting it from uni? Do you think that was a benefit to you?
I think it was at the time. I think when you have nothing to lose, then you don't have to take maybe the jump that you might have to if you're taking that entrepreneurial decision later in life. I think the downside of it is you don't really know anything. So you don't really have the experience to be able to shortcut to a lot of the decisions. So as a result, we ended up building a lot of our own solutions that we sort of reinventing stuff, which we probably didn't need to reinvent. It probably existed out there. We could have just gone to it a lot easier. Like we built our own account software, for example. And that was a huge waste of time. We could have quite easily just shortcut.
There's plenty of good software packages out there for things like that.
But we didn't know
you don't
that.
Know, do
yeah,
you,
know
if you're
that,
young?
And we didn't. There was a lot of stuff that we didn't know. So I think there's definitely something to be said for starting it early. I think if I had one thing that I would do differently, will perhaps be maybe don't start it quite so early. Maybe go out and get a little bit of experience, so you know what you're talking about, and then maybe make the decision. But you know, it's worked out okay.
Yeah,
so.
You're 25 years in, and you're still here, so it's worked out just fine, I would say. Well, we'll come and explore some of those parts of that journey and unpick it as we go. But I'll move on to Sarah now, because you started the Simply Bows and Chairs business, which was your first business that you owned, out of necessity, really, at a place where you were at rock bottom.
Yes, I think when I actually, while you were all talking, I was thinking about how all my businesses had started, and the next venture I'm going into as well, it's all been adversity. And it's where I've been in adversity, but I've worked out how can I transform that into opportunity. And that's what's happened through my whole journey, really. And yeah, at that point in time, I was a board director in 2008 when it closed, of a corporate event and leisure business, and I'd identified a gap in the market there for what I classed as specialist event linen for chair decor and table linen and so forth. And I think it just got to a point where I just had nothing to lose. You know, they'd repossessed my house, I was bankrupt, my little boy was 9, I was on income support, I'd sold anything that might have had any value to try and get by. And I think the day they came to value my house to take it for auction was the day when the little ember of hope sort of caught fire and said, you just can't take my little boy's house, that can't happen. And for some reason, this little voice in my head was saying, try the specialist event linen route, try it. And I think I just sat down and, rather than what Jeremy Kyle, I decided to write a business plan. And I just thought, well, just write it and see what it looks like. And then that became, you know, a multi-award-winning brand. It saved my home from repossession. I franchised it. And then that kind of just rolled me onto my journey, really, where my ex-husband had lost his mum and dad to cancer within 18 months of each other, farmers. Long story, I'll not bore you with it. But anyway, his farm, you know, we needed to do something with it to try and make more than it was worth. And I got the idea to develop it into houses. And again, a very long story short, over two phases, we built 8 beautiful houses. And then again, in the pandemic, I found myself absolutely lost because I couldn't run from a lot of my own personal battles. And that's when I then wrote the ICAN methodology, because I decided to apply the method of how to rebuild from the ashes, my businesses, that I had to do that with myself. Otherwise, I was just going to constantly crash and burn out. So the ICAN method came. And then that's obviously when I started the mentoring of the CEOs, which is my passion. And I adore my clients with all my heart. And now through a horse that was ill last year, I'm now going into hopefully launching some products for the equine sector into the UK with a partner who was a former client of mine. So bit of a bumpy ride, but
you know.
I feel quite lucky to know you because I'm not a client of yours, but I feel like I get that for free. Because we'll chat and without fail, whatever we're talking about, you've always got amazing advice. You're always putting fire back in the belly. You always, and I always come away feeling like inspired. And I think, oh, so yeah, I feel.
Thank you. And I always come away from yours feeling that little bit younger.
Did you have that, Sarah, when you were right at rock bottom? Did you have anyone pulling you out? It sounds like you did it on your own.
Yeah, and that's been one of the battles that I've, I'm quite happy to talk about it. One of my mental health issues was the fear of standing alone and feeling alone for a lot of my journey. And it's just something that I've been coming to terms with very recently, actually. And agoraphobia was a big part of my life in my 20s that I've battled and had to battle with. So it was a statement that I am not as unworthy as some may think, and I will prove it. So there was that bit of fire came when they decided to take my house off me. And when my little boy had come in and said one of the mums was laughing in front of her kids saying, "Mum, we've gone belly up, what does that mean?" And I thought, right, I will show you what that means and we will not go belly up. And I think those sort of things gave fire to my belly, you know. But I was lucky that my mum and my dad lived nearby, and my mum was a huge source of, you know, someone I could talk to, walk and talk. So that was it, really. But other than that, no.
But it's interesting, isn't it, that now you're like a cheerleader for other people
yeah.
that are having struggles.
For that
and
reason.
You didn't have the cheerleader yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe it was your parents.
Yeah.
But you've taken on that role to support mm-hmm. other people. So perhaps you would have loved to have someone that was picking you up at that time.
And I never want them around. To feel how I felt, which is why I'm so passionate about providing that space.
Well, we're here to talk about resilience. So I'd like to know what resilience means to you. Let's maybe start with Matt.
I think resilience for me is just about consistency of effort. And it's about, you know, you're going to have stuff thrown at you. And you know that over the course of a usual year or whatever period, it's going to happen. Something's going to go wrong. It always does, to a greater or lesser extent. And I think if you can get yourself out of bed every morning and you can make sure that whatever's happening is that you can put some consistency of effort in and make sure that you get up and you do whatever it is that you need to get done. And try not to dwell too much on how I certainly works for me. I try not to dwell too much on how bad I'm feeling about something. I just get up and don't really give that side of it too much space in my head. That works for me. I just get up and do it and do it and do it. And then eventually it pays off. You know, you've got to keep going, because the waves will keep coming. So you better still be there.
And I think also it's about keeping going when times are good as well, because if you take your foot off the pedal and you're not consistent mm-hmm. in the good times, that will catch up with you.
It does, but I mean, I think you need energy, right? And so I think for me, energy is a very relative concept. Energy when things are going well is easy, because you can just draw on it and it's good fun. You don't mind being busy. Busy when you're counting too much money is is great, but busy when everything's going wrong and I mean, that is absolutely draining. So I think, yeah, sometimes you can maybe take your foot off the gas a little bit and think, okay, we've done really well here and this is quite comfortable and life's all right at the moment. Do we really need to kick on to the next level? But I think eventually after maybe a holiday period, you do that, because I think it's not just about the comfort. It's about just the professional pride and knowing that you're doing whatever it is that you're doing to the best possible standard that you can.
Yeah, definitely. And Kim, would you agree?
Totally.
With the definition of resilience, what would you add to
I'm
that?
I'm nodding away. And when you're talking about headspace there, for me, I think that's a massive thing. Personally, for me as well, I think I'm quite honest and open about my headspace. Life happens. You know, the past week, my mum's been unwell. She's fine now. She's been in hospital. But it's been, and you know, I'll come in to work and I'll say, no, I'm not in the best headspace to be doing this, this and this today, but we'll do X, Y and Z instead. And yeah, like you say, we'll pick the things that we are going to do well and we'll go ahead with them instead of just completely crumble and be like, I can't do this. So I think for me, it's about not taking things personally, because things you can't take things personally, unfortunately. And that can knock you if you do. That can stop you from continuing going if you do. So yeah, not taking things personally and being honest about your headspace, because we have life and other things to contend with as entrepreneurs and business owners. And I think if you're open and honest with that, where you are, then people can be more aware of how much energy you can put into something at any given time. So they're not then thinking, oh, is something happening here? What's happening? like, oh yeah, I'm having a bit of a bad week, but it's all right, I'll be back to it next week, or whatever it might be. I think for me, that's just being honest about how much energy you have to put towards the resilience that you need to have to keep going.
And if you felt you've become more aware of that as you've matured.
Absolutely.
matured in business, you become more aware about having the need for that headspace, which is important to you. Is that one of the skills that you've had to sort of recognise in yourself and work on?
I've learned that the hard way, if I'm totally honest. And Sarah will probably have seen me go through this. I, at one point, was like, must come in 100% energy, must show the team, must give everybody that confidence, must exude this kind of resilient human being who, no matter what's going on in my life, can still continue to do all of this at the same time. It's not normal. That's not normal. And at some point, the cracks will show, and then other people will start to kind of be worried about you. So it's better to be able to say, okay, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm dealing with right now. So we're going to do this, this and this this week or whatever it is. You have to allow life to be part of your world and not just railroad through it and try and put a front on and a face on and be this resilient robot consistently. It doesn't work, and you will at some point burn out. I think maybe all three of us have maybe been through some form of burnout. Matt's smirking. But yeah, and I think that I learned that the hard way through burnout. Yeah, absolutely.
So was there one moment or period in time where you went, I'm actually at a really burnt out phase, I need to change the way that I conduct myself?
I think I'm very lucky that I have a very good group of friends and family around me, and very close, and they were the ones who actually, I would have still been doing it if it wasn't for them, because that's just in my nature. But they kind of stopped and pulled me, and Sarah as well actually did at one point, you need to slow down. You need to slow down. You go on 1,000 miles an hour, and at some point, you know, you need to slow down. At some point, this is not going to be very fun for you. And I think it got to a point where I was losing the joy, because it was just like, okay, it was like a marathon every single day. I stopped doing some of the things like I enjoyed, like doing podcasts, and I just was kind of, yeah, not enjoying it. So I did eventually take the advice of my lovely twin sister, who gave us a bit of a stern telling off. And yeah, friends and people around us who were like, wow, you seem a bit burnt out. Are you okay? Are you enjoying this? And I kind of questioned, maybe I'm not. So yeah, slowed down a bit.
So is that how you kind of recovered, by slowing down?
I did. It's really hard. I think entrepreneurs and people of that speed who continually like to be busy, for me personally, I find that really difficult, really difficult. Our board laugh at me all the time because I'm like, I'm doing things slowly. And they're like, no, you're not. But I think the best thing for me was I had a little girl, and I all of a sudden had a new priority, and that changes everything. So I was kind of, my focus shifted, and that helped. So yeah, I slowed down, and I wanted to spend more time with her. So it gave me a whole new purpose.
And Matt, have you ever had any of those moments where you've had to really pull yourself out and use all of that energy?
Yeah, it's called COVID.
yeah, so COVID in the hospitality sector must have been, I mean, hats off to you for surviving
that's a trauma sigh, that is.
Yeah, I don't want to unpick the trauma too much, because I can see in your body language that this is not a good experience, but maybe share some of the lessons with us that you've learned in terms of building your resilience as a result of what you had to go through.
I think some of this I just sort of put down to PTSD, you know, just try and forget some of it, because it was just so bad. I mean, I think, I know there was a huge amount of people in a very similar boat, but Stags and Hens was just particularly, if you could have engineered anything that would be a real stag and hen killer, it would have been COVID from a business perspective. Because, you know, you couldn't, even when things were firing back up, you still had the rule of six, so you couldn't do that, and then people weren't traveling, and then, but not least because we had a huge amount of groups that had pre-booked, because it obviously happened in the big booking period for us is January, February, so we'd booked everything in for that year. And so all the miscommunication, all the lack of communication that was happening at the time meant that we just didn't know what to do, so we were sat on client funds, for ages, trying, if I'm honest, not to refund them if we could possibly get away with it, but ultimately having to do so and having to put in systems in place. We couldn't even furlough people. We were having to pay people back. So we had to completely re-engineer how all the systems worked, figure out how to deal with, 3,000 bookings that were in. We eventually had to refund over £1.3 million. We lost hundreds of thousands of pounds that year. But then we came out the end of it. And then we'd obviously had to make some redundancies, and then trying to find new staff or having staff where no one really knew what they were doing when we first came back out, and also the same things happening in our supply chain as well. It was just absolutely exhausting. I mean, absolutely exhausting. And I was pretty convinced at one point, there's a reasonable chance that we might go under. And I thought, I think this is it now. I think we are going. The whole team's exhausted. And so I don't really know how we got through that other than just brute force. And I think we just did it because we had to. We didn't have a choice. And we just came in every day and argued and fought every day amongst our heads of department. But worked together and eventually figured it out. And it's because we didn't have a choice. There's no way I would ever fancy doing that again.
So there were days where you thought, I really fancy just chucking in the towel and escaping from this. But by 10 o'clock and you've had a coffee or whatever, you're like, no, we haven't got a choice. We've got to just keep going.
There were some really dark times.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And I think you were mentioning about sort of support networks before, and I'm not the sort of I don't tend to like relying on other people. I don't really like using support networks. I don't really like mentioning about things. But obviously I had my parents and wife to really help me through or talk to me. But I think the biggest one is I got a phone call off some family friends of ours who are kind of about my age, and they said, listen, I know you're going through some tough times. If you need any money, we don't want to give it to you, but if you absolutely need it, we'll help you out. And I couldn't believe how much that meant to me after that phone call. And I just thought, it just gives you a little bit of an extra boost to think, actually, I think we might be all right here.
It's a bit of hope.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. It was just a lovely touching thing.
An act of kindness, isn't it?
It was,
and it's actually reaching out and sort of recognising that you're in that space and just saying, we've got your back. I hope you've rung them back and said thank you.
Yes, yeah.
I've organised, getting a Christmas card this year.
I've organised quite a few of those stag do's.
And when you look back at that time, Matt, and we don't want to drag it too much out of your memory, but would you do anything differently?
Actually, don't think I would. Obviously, in hindsight, you know what the decisions were, and you know exactly where everything went to. I don't think I would do it differently. I think we had a really good team in place, and we all, in some ways, it was kind of our finest hour. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a lot of fun, but we all did pull together, and we all had a really positive attitude when things weren't looking so bad. So, no, I think we did everything we possibly could do, and I'm pretty proud of how we navigated that.
Yeah, and I guess people say you learn from the low point, so it's maybe made you stronger for anything that comes your way in the future.
Everything else seems like a bit more of a speed bump than a problem. It definitely, I think, when you can compare, because I think what you do perceive as problems in reality is actually far smaller than probably you perceive it to be. And so when you have come over something which is really a mountain that COVID was, everything else does pale a little bit.
And for you, Sarah, when you look back on some of the lows that you've had, are there anything that you would say, well, you really learned from that, and almost wouldn't change anything?
COVID was the same for me because I had 9 offices shut down in the wedding industry. So, I had 9 franchisees all staring at me through a Zoom screen wanting help and support. And that's, as I say, and I'm burning out in COVID again and terrified that this business was going to go down. And I had 9 people I felt very responsible for, who I had to protect and support as much as I could, And thank goodness we made it through and have, fingers crossed, come out stronger, But no, I think in terms of what these guys have said here, there's not a lot more you can say, really. It's you just keep your head down and you've got to keep going. But I think you've always got to remember that you're a someone and not just a someone's. And I think it's very important that sometimes you can lose that, and you can sometimes, as a founder, our businesses are an extension of us, they're part of us, they run through our veins, and sometimes it's hard to put yourself at the top of your to-do list, but you need that energy, because it's the energy, like you guys have said, that...
Well, it's like they say, don't you, put your own life vest on before you help others. You've got to look after yourself, you've got to keep yourself energised, because if you're not healthy and fit and leading the business, then you're going to be a step behind before you even get out of bed. Mm-hmm. Thank you. If you're enjoying the conversations on this podcast, then get involved. The Entrepreneurs Forum is a membership organisation for entrepreneurs based in the northeast of England. You can find out all the details by going to our website, entrepreneursforum.net.
So do any of you have any advice for anyone who's listening who might be at that low point now, who sort of needs to really dig deep and find that resilience where they might be thinking, I'm not sure where this is coming from?
I always think it's really bad making decisions when things are bad.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You got to try and remember that, take a beat, take a minute, remember why you're doing this, remember what things are like in the good times. And remember the necessity of the bad times. You know, not everything's going to be all rosy. Can't be plain sailing forever. You have to have issues. And at some point, you might have to make a decision, and is it right for you? And I think that isn't a decision that you should make when it's at its worst. Mm. Try and make that, you know, with a little bit less passion. And yeah, there's better days ahead, for sure.
I think that would be my advice, is why are you doing it? Ask yourself why you're doing it and what your actual goal was in the first place, because along the way you can lose sight of that. And ask yourself why you're putting yourself through it and what your goals are, because that changed my trajectory of things, because I kind of went through this space of, oh, wow, I'm keeping this going as a certain level, and then asked myself my question, why am I doing this? And then changed the trajectory of the business entirely. We, unfortunately, again, made redundancies, did things that aren't fun, that really are not nice. Shut one thing down, opened it again the next day. It was absolutely awful time. Again, don't make decisions in those kind of dark moments. I gave myself some 12 months, actually, I gave myself to make some serious decisions and change things around. But then I changed it around that was much more suitable for the reasons why I was doing it in the first place. Because otherwise, you can end up running a fantastic multi-million pound business. That's great. However, are you enjoying yourself? Are you doing it for the right reasons? What's your actual point? So, yeah, why are you doing it? Would be my advice.
A good yardstick is asking yourself quite regularly, what satisfies me and what frustrates me? What's satisfying in me in my life?
Yeah.
And what's currently frustrating me? What's satisfying me in my business? And what's currently frustrating me? And trying to identify what the things are. Because there's a pattern. I think patterns form. And it's easy for patterns to run and run. And if you can stop and actually take the time to consider what it is that's got you into that position in the first place. Do you know what I mean? What if you can sort of retrace your steps to when you first felt satisfied, or last felt satisfied rather, when you last felt satisfied, what has happened on that journey to now put you in the position of frustration and stuck? Why have you lost traction?
How did you get your spark back after COVID?
After COVID, I think it was about bringing through a new team.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a new team that was ready to go, and I think it was about trying to...
Fresh energy.
Well, it was, but also prior to that, we'd actually got to a point where I think a lot of our employees had kind of probably capped out. They didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
But it was a natural kind of change point for a lot of those guys, and they were superb, and we had some really great times with those. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that we didn't lose that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we didn't lose that culture, that we still ended up having a great place to work. And we did. And we got through it. That's one of the things that definitely made it worthwhile.
Good.
Yeah, and one of the things you've got in common is that you're all really passionate about people and the people that you employ and that work for you and creating amazing places to work. And I know I've talked to you, Kim, about this before, and obviously being down to your business and the staff there. I mean, you have virtually no one ever leaves.
No, unfortunately. Well, unfortunately.
You didn't say that.
Unfortunately. Fortunately, no one ever leaves. Very fortunately. We did have to make redundancies, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, because it was very much, and like I say, don't take things personally. That's one of my things earlier. That's because I took all that very personally, and it was really hard to not, because we'd became such a close-knit family. But the business needs of where we were taking it to, we didn't need some of those departments anymore, and it was kind of it was impossible to keep it going in that way. It was completely impossible. We couldn't have carried on the way that we were, so it was really tough to do that. But yeah, I think there was a lot of upset people about it, because we'd created such a family. And it did feel like cutting your family off. It was like really tough.
And so going forwards, do you describe your team now as family?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And, you know, the team that we have now and anybody new that comes in, they just get the vibe straight away and they're part of that and they're, you know, very close-knit. We have our WhatsApp groups and what have you, and everybody knows everything about each other's life. It's very close-knit and we're all aware of life from each other as well. So, yeah, it's a lovely way to be, but there's tough times to go alongside that as well. But yeah, it's a lovely, I wouldn't change it.
Well, if there's tough times in your office, you can get on the swing. They've actually got a physical swing attached to a tree inside the building.
Yeah, we might be getting rid of the swing, but I'll tell you about that later. Yeah, no, we have a swing. And that is actually, sometimes we do have a little swing competition to see who can touch the ceiling.
Health and safety.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's good. We have a really nice vibe. Today, everyone got like a nice, what did they get? Zapatista or something, some kind of, and it was everybody sits. So one of the things in the office is we all have lunch together. Everybody stops and we all have lunch. We've got a massive table. Everybody stops and we all have lunch together at the same time. It's been the thing from day one that I kind of was very strict about. Said, no, stop. We're having lunch. Stop what you're doing. Come and have lunch. And it's a really nice, just a nice little, sounds daft, doesn't it? But
no, I think when it's really good.
When you're busy and everyone's, it's just those little things can make a bit of difference, I think.
I think there's a growing trend towards that because we've had a couple of guests on who've mentioned the same thing.
Yeah.
Just everybody stops at the same time.
Stop, have lunch, chill out. There's no watching of clocks. There's no, and in our space, in our office, and everyone has quite a lot of freedom, I guess. They will go and watch their kids play or they'll drop them off at school and come in half an hour later or whatever it might be. My kind of rule is get the work done and I'm happy. Get it done on time, deliver the projects and I'll be happy. So yeah, it's very much a family.
And Matt, have you maintained your culture? Because you started it when you were 22 and probably what was important to you in terms of culture then might be different to today. Have you maintained the energy of the business that you run as it's matured over 25 years?
Certainly changed a lot. I think when I look back at what it was like back then, I think it did need to change. You know, some of the photos we see of the stuff that we used to do, and I think, oh, this is this doesn't look good in 2024.
But that's life as well, isn't it? And society has probably changed over that time as well.
And I think also I've certainly aged through the workforce as well. You know, I started this out at 22. I was definitely the youngest employee, if you like, or member of staff or whatever. And then that kind of went, and then I actually became in the middle, and that was brilliant. And then I'm kind of aging out a little bit now. So that's a different dynamic. So you've got people who come into work and they don't necessarily want to talk to you as much as maybe they used to. And I think that's something you've just got to be aware of. You can't really kind of force it too much. You want to be open, but you also don't want to be kind of suffocating people as well. So no, it's evolved. I think we've still got it. We've got a great place to work. It's not maybe quite exactly the same as it used to be, you know, 25 years ago, so not 20 years ago, but it's still great place to work.
Fantastic. And Sarah, for you, in terms of culture and building your teams, because you've got a franchise model, so you're not necessarily in control of all of the teams and the culture at the different businesses, but you can influence that.
Yes.
How do you manage that?
Well, I've currently got 9, and I try to sort of build my business where it's a team. So from day one, I got the franchisees all to work together as a team, and I encouraged stock share and things like that so they could save money and, you know, like a real team culture rather than individual offices. And that's worked really, really well for us. And every year they come to my house before Christmas and we all have lunch together and we all share best practice and share stories and ask each other what they think we can do to improve the business, you know, for next year. And it's always been that a very open culture. And we're just about to go through a second phase of scale up now. So I've just, one of my previous franchisees who'd sold out has just come back as my brand manager. So we're just literally tightening up all of our systems and processes and making sure everybody is on brand, because you can go a little bit rogue. Franchisees do, you know, sort of want to go off a bit. But on the whole, I think as long as everybody's bought into it and they appreciate the brand values and understand by respecting them how well they'll work for them, I think it's worked for us. You know, they're all bought in and passionate. So it's been great for me. It's worked for me.
Great. And we've talked a lot about lows, but we're not just here to talk about the bad times. In terms of the highs, what's been your biggest high? And I'll turn to you, Kim.
Oh, God, that's a tough one. Before I left the office, one of the girls was chatting about this. We had a meeting and someone had asked, the main question we normally get is, oh, which celebrity has used the product? What's the most? And that's been amazing. But for me, I was always more excited by the makeup artist. I don't really know who people are. But I was definitely obsessed with makeup artists and their profession and who they were. So for me, some of the main highs that I do remember back in the very early days was seeing this product that we've literally conceptualised, made, manufactured, stuck stickers on and then shipped out, being used by some of these major makeup artists and people who I've looked up to most of my life from being 13 and watching them be tagged and using the products and be excited about it. So that definitely for sure has been some of the moments that stick out for me are the makeup artists. People will know them as, like, oh, Beyonce's makeup artist or Such a Body's makeup artist. But for me, it's the makeup artist that I'm really excited by.
So well, definitely. It's the people that you admired growing up and suddenly are admiring you.
They're artists. Amazing. Absolutely, they're artists and I'm an artist. And I think for me that was something that, I admire them. And that was really exciting. And everyone else was like, Beyonce. And I was like, Sir John. So, yeah, I think that was definitely, I remember some of those moments quite clearly, seeing people that I'd really admired use the product.
How did you celebrate in those moments?
It's the most bizarre thing. One of the girls in social media would kind of chip up from the other side of the room and be like, oh my God, Billie Eilish has tagged us, or whoever it might be, or Such a Body's tagged us. And we'd all be like, yay! And we'd have like a 30-second little cheer and then just get back on with work. It's the weirdest thing. Like, all right, can you do this and this with that tag, repost to put it on stories? Great, yep. Carry on. Just normal, back to normal life. And then you might be having your tea later and be kind of like, got a tag from Billie Eilish today.
Telling your daughter, and then she just says, what's for dinner?
Cool. Who's that? Or telling me gran or whoever. Who? So yeah, it's some of those moments definitely stand out as some of the highlights. But I also think some of the big team moments as well. So we had a really cool launch party. That was a really, really good vibe because it felt like we can finally stop and celebrate. So those, for more than 30 seconds, those moments are really nice highs for me as well. The launch party, I would say, it's a very good party. So, yeah.
An entrepreneurial high for you, Matt?
I think you remember your early ones, don't you? I think that's what it is. We used to operate on a slightly different model. We are now our own tour operators. So we arrange everything on Stags and Hens from the start to the finish. But when we first started, we were an agency. This was mostly because I didn't know what I was doing, really. And so we just needed a proper business to take over our stuff. And so we were operating on a commission, and we knew we weren't probably getting the best deal. And so we went down and we met up with another company, and I spent all day negotiating. I mean, literally all day negotiating. And then at 4 a.m., we finally shook hands over a 50% increase.
Yes.
And I think I remember ringing my... Well, she was my girlfriend at the time, now wife, and saying, we've done it, we've got 50% extra. And it was the best feeling. But actually, it turned out to be like the worst decision, because actually this new company were terrible. But they were awful. And we spent the next sort of 6 years trying to get out of that deal. But that was a big high at the time. I really enjoyed that. And you were mentioning parties there. And I think that's also a big thing for us.
The memories.
Or the lack of them. That's the,
yes, yeah, exactly.
How you measure any good party is how little of it you can remember of it. But we had a lot of, we've done a lot of supplier parties in the past. And that's brilliant because you get to get all the same people in a room that you all work with. And actually, the great thing is seeing them connect with each other, because they're a counterpart that we have in maybe the Czech Republic, but they've got, you know, they're the same person, if you like, or the same, fulfill the same role as someone else in Hungary or in the Netherlands or whatever. And they can recognize the issues that they have. And seeing those guys bond and have fun and being able to join in with the success is superb. And we've got a big party, as you know, Elaine, coming up.
I do know. I have an invite for it. Thank you.
Yeah, and so I'm hopeful that retains a lot of the same spirit that those parties have been. And I think it would be nice having a just to look back at the 25 years and thinking, you know, actually that was pretty good fun.
Which is the best city then to party in?
Good question.
Well, it's Newcastle, isn't it? It is actually Newcastle. It is actually, yeah. I think it's consistently just been superb. I mean, the people, I mean, I think, you know, we are probably preaching to the choir here, but the people are superb in the Northeast. It's a really great party atmosphere, and there's a reason why it's the biggest location in the UK. And it's not just because we're based here. It really is like a place where it's renowned internationally as a party city. It's superb. Outside of that, there's lots of other kind of contenders internationally. Up until recently, I'd say Budapest. That's probably not quite where it used to be in the past. Liverpool, actually, weirdly, is coming through. That's a good one. But it's kind of the old guard a bit more now. Dublin is still really punching very highly.
So we're going a bit retro.
It is a bit retro.
Cities,
yeah,
of the past are coming back into favour.
We've seen a lot of change in that, and you kind of, it does sort of come a bit full circle, and you do see the rise and fall of various cities from a party point of view. But right now, it is still a bit retro. Even Benidorm is flying at the moment. Yeah, genuine. Yeah, it's going a bit crazy. It's having a proper renaissance. So yeah, it's old school right now.
And we're digressing a bit, but what's the weirdest request you've ever had for one of your stag or hen do's?
There's lots of things that you can't share. We did have someone try and charter a submarine.
Oh, God. Wow.
Yeah, that was quite big. Yeah, charter submarine. We've got...
Did it happen?
No, we did try and make it happen, though. We really did try and make it happen. At the moment, you can probably hear the cogs. I'm thinking, I can't say that.
I can't say.
Well, we'll move on to Sarah's.
The audience has gone very red here.
And on that note, we're going to pause on Matt while he thinks of a really good example for us. And we're going to move to Sarah, who's going to tell us about her entrepreneurial highs.
So I think the very first one was being backed by Business Link when they, at my startup, you know, when I said I had that idea, and they offered me a small business grant to get started. That was just like magic.
Validation.
It was just like, this business plan, actually, someone really does think this is going to work. And that was the start of it all, you know, that. So that really was a huge high. And then I suppose the first order, and Mum and I delivering this little wedding, that was really exciting. And then when the first franchisee came on board, and it was like they invested in the brand and they believed in the brand, that was magical.
And what did you do to celebrate these moments?
No, I didn't. Do you know that?
No, she's not telling us now. She's the one going red now.
That's the trouble. That is the trouble. That is the problem. And that's what I really want to change now. That is why, that's what I've learned. You know, I won some really big awards and prestigious awards, you know, with Simply Bows and Chair Covers. And I didn't celebrate. And it was all to do with self-worth and enough not being enough and pushing and doing. And that's what that was all the work I had to do to understand why enough wasn't going to be enough. And so, you know, how people have celebrated, and that's wonderful. I didn't. I was, as soon as I won one thing, forget the award, right, on to the next thing. As soon as I've made this figure, right, I want to be on the next one. If I've got that fancy hotel, I want the next best one. And that's how and it was just self-destruct. It really was. So the little wins were magical. But from now on, if I get any wins, I'll be commissioning this man here to organise the party.
And I think to anyone listening, I guess the message is, all of you described little wins or big wins early on, but celebrate them because it is a journey.
So
it's a roller coaster.
Absolutely.
Don't do it for 30 seconds.
Every day.
Don't just do it for 30 seconds. You know, go and have a drink that night with the team and do a toast and really cheers it. Because it took me, I think, one of the girls in PR did a full PR document with all the celebs and stuff who had used all the products. And when I went back through that, I was quite overwhelmed. I was like, oh my God, I didn't realise this has amounted to this. And at that point, I was like, I feel like we've missed the moments.
Exactly.
And I think you have to stop to celebrate, but make time to do it, because it's really important to celebrate.
I'm kind of grieving that I didn't, to be honest. Yeah, you know, like when I look back now at some of those really exciting moments that I didn't celebrate, I look back and I do feel a bit of grief. That I didn't, if that makes sense. And I just think anybody, doesn't matter what your win is, it doesn't matter how big or how small it is, just celebrate and enjoy the now.
Take it in.
Yeah, absorb it all and be proud.
Stop. Stop and take
yes.
it in.
Yes.
And be proud of what you've achieved. Proud. Because yes. it's not easy, as you all know. You're all great entrepreneurs. It's not easy being an entrepreneur. So you've got to make the most of the good times, because it's not every day, as we've talked yeah. about yeah. on this episode. Yeah.
So moving on to inspiration. Is there anyone who inspires you as you're going on your entrepreneurial journeys?
Mine shifts and change all the time, because I read the magazines and such around the Northeastern, and I'm always excited to meet somebody new. And I think so many people, the forums are fantastic for this. Like, it's brilliant, because every event I've ever been to, I'll meet somebody new and then I'm inspired by them. And I'm loving what Real Foods have done, Charlotte and
Sean.
Yes. I'm loving what they've done. I think that's really, really inspiring. But yeah, mine, over the years, it's been so many different people. And I just think, yeah, I think that's the forum's fantastic for being able to introduce you to new people who you can be inspired by.
Great. Well, thank you for that shout out. And Matt, anyone who inspires you?
I think I get inspired either by someone who works really specifically within my field, and I can sort of see how they've done something. I can see like the elegance in it, or how a system really ties up. And I think I really like that, and I think I can really appreciate when I can see excellence. I think when I also see inspiration, I see it in people who probably have things that I don't. So I'll see someone who can, for example, I'll chat periodically to Alice Hall. Yes. And I see what she's done, and I think I'm just so impressed that not only is like this serial entrepreneurship mm-hmm. of being able to take something, but also to take something which is in the moment and really captures something which is trending right now, but also to build an audience. Mm-hmm. When you look at Stags and Hens, it has lots of pluses, but one of the downsides is you can't ever really build a clientele, because mm-hmm. by its very definition, it's a you do it kind of once and then you don't do it again. But I love the idea of how you build a brand, how you build a story, how you communicate with customers, how you then continue to then re-engage them and take them along that journey. So when I see that done with a degree of excellence, like Alice does it, I think I look at that and I think that's not really my forte, but when you see it, it's so impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing, actually. Alice is fabulous. We need to get her on the podcast, don't we? But she, every time we have an episode, her name comes up all the time as someone that people admire. I think that's fantastic. Yes. One to watch.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it's about people who pay forward as well. You know, like entrepreneurs who give the time to pay forward their time and their experience. I know these are bigger hitters, but you've got the likes of Theo Pofitis, who's done his SBS, Small Business Sunday, and he's got thousands of people now who he's got in a group who are working together and championing each other and collaborating and sorting. And he does a big conference every year and has speakers and inspiration for them. And Holly Tucker, through COVID, you know, she founded Not on the High Street, but what she gave back to small businesses every day, he was showing up, you know, supporting and helping and championing and holding what she called the pharmacies and the clinics for small businesses. So I think it's people, you know, who've been hugely successful, but will pay back to inspire and enthuse the next generation. They're people who really inspire me to be a better person and to pay forward as much as I can.
You're good, and we're glad that you are. I think you're doing a fab job, Sarah. Well, we're running out of time for today's conversation. I can't believe every time I say this, we run out of time because the conversation goes so quickly. So we're going to wrap up now. We've just got a couple of questions to wrap up. Just short fire, like one word answers. Have you learnt more from the highs or lows in your career?
From the lows, for sure. I would say I've learnt much more from the lows, absolutely.
Lows.
Yeah.
Lows.
Okay, everyone, you learn more for the lows. So if you're in
Absolutely.
A low, see it as a learning opportunity.
100%, yeah.
And you will emerge out of it. Second question, have you experienced more highs or more lows?
Difficult question. More highs. But pending.
I think I notice the lows more.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
So you think more lows, but it's probably
more highs. Yeah.
It probably is more highs.
I totally agree. Yeah. I think I've probably had some amazing highs, but focused on the lows.
So let's repurpose that and focus a little bit on the highs, give yourself some balance and give yourselves a pat on the back for what you have achieved.
I've got total anxiety by fire questions, but keep going.
I only had two. The fire is done now.
Oh, is that it? Okay, a few.
So final question, advice for anyone listening who is an aspiring entrepreneur, who's about to set foot on this roller coaster journey. The answer cannot be don't do it. Other than that, what is your advice to them?
My advice would be you're in it. You don't realise, but right now, when you're doing what you're doing in this startup phase and that you're in it, you're doing it, these are the moments that you look back on. We've all said it today, like, these are the bits what you look back on and go, I was an entrepreneur then. You know, and you, no matter how much you might not believe it right now, but you're in it and you're doing it, and celebrate it and enjoy the journey. Enjoy the journey.
Yeah. Just recognise as well that this is going to be all consuming.
Yeah.
You're going to think about this 24/7 all the time. It's just going to completely consume you. And try not to worry as much as you probably are.
You can see the worry beads lifted up everyone's face here.
Not everyone's going to get your journey. So surround yourself with like-minded people and try to, you know, look for the people who inspire you and never be afraid to reach out and ask for help. Mm-hmm. Because, and we've talked about entrepreneurs paying forward, you know, entrepreneurs, seasoned entrepreneurs understand your journey and we get it and, you know, we want to help, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I think that's a fantastic note to finish on. Entrepreneurs want to help other entrepreneurs. We don't want you to make the same mistakes as we've made, because we know it's hard. And if you can, you know, share that, then that's always a good thing. And well, that's been a fantastic conversation. Please go away knowing that this has been a high for us. I hope you've enjoyed it. And to those listening, remember to celebrate those highs.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. There's absolutely loads of episodes of A Cast of Entrepreneurs, so check out who else has been on the podcast. Give us a listen, like, subscribe, leave us a review, and tune in next time for another exciting edition of A Cast of Entrepreneurs.